Hi, my name is Anne McElhinney.
And I'm Philip McAleer.
And welcome to the Anne and Philip Scoop Daily Virus, where we discuss what film?
We discuss the latest news, views, advice and madness of the pandemic.
Indeed. And it's Thursday, December the 3rd, week 37. That's 9 months and a quarter of the two-week flatten the curve lockdown. And we want to start...
Lockdown. You're from Belfast.
Give me a minute there. Thank you to everyone who donated on Giving Tuesday. We saw a wonderful response and people are really looking forward to our next project that we hinted about on our email list. If you're not on our email list, you need to get there ASAP so that you find out what we're up to. And you can sign up, by the way, at unreportedstorysociety.com.
And you'll be on our email list. We don't, by the way, we won't spam you, but we do
update you.
And we have this really great project, this Biden-esque project. Mm-hmm. We won't go into too many details, but it's a big one. It's going to be our best yet. It's going to be our funniest yet. It's going to be our most damning and most dangerous yet. To get to know about it first, sign up to unreportedstorysociety.com. So thank you again to everyone who donated.
And we do know that it's a really hard year and it's been an awful year for many people, not just financially, but emotionally and from a health point of view. Yeah. It's just really tough and it's not over yet. And so we're super appreciative of all the people who turned up and donated. And you can donate too. If you didn't donate yesterday, you can still donate at unreportedstorysociety.com. So we have breaking news.
There's exciting news on the LA County restaurant ban. We're going to be bringing you that for early in the show. It's really interesting. The restaurants are not open, but it is going to be, looks like evidence is a difficult thing and they're going to have to produce it. So let's.
And we have another very, very worthy recipient of the Let Them Eat Cake Award.
Yes.
And the CDC votes on who will get the vaccine first. And I wonder, are you on the list?
Yes. And
talk about a super spreader event, warning or rated pun alert.
Yes.
And Jake Tapper has decided to do some journalism now that the election is over. And quarantine is getting shorter.
Because of science.
And wow, NPR says charter schools do remote learning better than public schools.
But they try and hide it.
Yes.
And you won't believe this fact out about hospital beds. Seriously, wait for it, you just won't believe it.
That's factoid, by the way, Phelan. You know, if you were going to fault people with their pronunciation, you had a little bit of a quibble there. Your factoid was a bit factoid, somehow.
Fractious.
Okay, tell us about the breaking news, Phelan. And by the way, there's a context to the breaking news. Where were we yesterday? Where did we go yesterday, Phelan?
We were at Eat at Joe's.
Eat at Joe's in Redondo Beach.
Yes, we went there for lunch. And Joe...
To support Joe.
Yes, because as people probably know, every restaurant in LA is closed, outdoor and indoor.
LA County.
And they're looking to expand it statewide.
They are.
Now, you know, some cities don't have a huge restaurant scene. I mean, it's hard to underestimate the importance of the restaurant scene to the LA economy.
Yeah.
It's just this massive restaurant city. And it's a restaurant industry that keeps everything else going because lots of people who are here creatively, musicians, editors, actors, all are working the restaurant scene as well. So if you want going to close every restaurant in LA County, which is 20 million people, it needs to be based on solid science and real public health.
And that became an issue, didn't
yes.
it, Phelan?
Because that became an issue when the LA Board of Supervisors said, excuse me, what's your science for this? And they didn't have any.
Yeah.
And so the California...
And by the way, without the science, they still went ahead and judged that it would be a good idea to do this.
Yeah, the Board of Supervisors did. So the California Restaurant Association... took a case to court, and you know, courtroom news, you know, where this is where we got this report. They said that, you know, they led with an Los Angeles County judge upheld a ban on outdoor dining. But you know, the actual important thing is that the judge insisted that the health officials would have to show evidence of why the ban is needed. It's LA County Superior Judge James Chalifant, and he said the county needs to produce evidence for the allegations it's making. He said the county could be overwhelmed with COVID-19 patients. He didn't know, but the county itself did not offer anything to back up the conclusion. And he said the basis for the conclusions about being overwhelmed are vital to the county's argument. And this is a direct quote from the judge. What are the hospital's capacities? How loaded are you? What is the current risk of overwhealming the healthcare system? And, you know, the county's attorney said, and this is what he said 9 months into a pandemic, it would be difficult to provide, quote, the type of scientific certainty and precision on data the court seeks, because infections and hospital bed availability are based on projections that often change.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, Chalifat agreed it's a fluid situation, but not
the
when
judge,
it comes
yeah.
not when it comes to intensive care unit beds. Those are fixed. It's hard to estimate the number of ICU beds.
Said the judge. This is the judge. Yeah, so the judge says, you know, yeah, I can see how some things are fluid, but you know, you've got a certain number of intensive care beds, and then the judge went on to say that the county didn't even provide any evidence, you know, of a risk benefit analysis on the harm that the health order closing the restaurants could have on the economy and the mental well-being of Angelinos who lost jobs or can't go out to eat in a restaurant. Now, this is public health 101,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. And the judge put it a different way. The judge says this is a big hole in the county's case, i.e. they did not do a risk-benefit analysis. I mean, public health 101. So we do this to stop this. But what are the negative consequences of doing that?
And we've said this before on the virus,
yeah.
That this has been always the problem with all of these directives from all over the world, by the way, where risk-benefit analysis wasn't done with any of the lockdowns. So basically, this is going to be an interesting case. And we went today to eat at Joe's in Redondo Beach. Wonderful premises.
Yes.
A very old diner that's been in operation for decades, and it was packed.
And
loads of lovely people there.
The health board have come out, the health authorities have come out
and threatened this
and
man.
And said, if you don't close within 3 days, you know, you should be closed. If you don't close within 3 days, we will come out on Friday and close you. And the judge today now, you know, he may have allowed the ban to remain, but he was asking some very difficult questions. Judge Chalifant asked why the county didn't have more information on the risks of outdoor dining 9 months into the pandemic. He asked whether the ban was based on field investigators who see people without masks at restaurants over an extended period of time. Siegel, the county attorney, said...
Attorney?
Yeah, county attorney, said the county might know more about the virus than it did in March, but there's still a risk when people eat outdoors without masks next to strangers. And it's like, a risk, yes, but like...
What?
Surely, have you done no investigation?
Yeah.
And they haven't. And they're devastating the economy on that basis.
And
so,
we went and we saw the, and we, you know, we went there today. We met Joe from Eat at Joe's in,
yes,
Redondo Beach. Really nice premises. We had a nice meal. And it was a lot of people who had travelled a distance, and also the locals there who have been patrons of that establishment for years. It was actually a very happy atmosphere, actually.
Yes.
Everyone there to support. And by the way, people wearing masks until they got to their tables and all of that kind of stuff. But we're moving on to the Eat the Cake Award. And, you know, this is getting to a ridiculous
stage. We're running
out
of cake.
Well, it's kind of getting to a ridiculous stage because you think, you know, okay, you know, Cuomo did this, Newsom did this, then there Nancy Pelosi, you know, and then we have Supervisor Kuhl.
Going to the restaurant. Eric Garcetti going to the BLM.
And now guess what we have. What do we have, Phelim?
We have the mayor of San Francisco.
London Breed. There's a name.
Crazy name, crazy lady. And she had her own French Laundry party. That's the famed, now very famous restaurant in Northern California, the most expensive restaurant in California. It's in the Napa Valley. And she had her own the night after Governor Newsom had his 12 people at an indoor table. She had her party at the French Laundry.
Can I just mention a point here about London Breed? And so London Breed would be a big socialist, by the way. And I just love who she went to the... First of all, that she went to the French Laundry, which is not a restaurant for the masses. It's for the very, very few $800 tasting menu. But I love the fact that she joined a socialite, you know? So she was there with the socialites, you know? So that's who London Breed is.
Low Lou's 60th
yeah.
birthday.
So somebody, you know, some randomer's 60th
as
birthday.
As you say, it's not like it was their daughter's graduation or wedding party.
Or her mother's funeral. No, it was actually a completely gratuitous event with some posh people from San Francisco who London Breed likes to hang out with, and she loves to go to the French Laundry. Well, guess what, London Breed? The rest of us love to go to our local restaurant, just like you. And so, actually, you know what? You, obviously, and Magda, we've had this conversation a number of times here. Here's the thing that we take out from all of this, from all of these people's behavior. Obviously, they really don't believe their own message.
Yes.
If they thought they were going to die, they wouldn't have gone themselves, right?
Yes.
So these are not, these are bad
people. They don't believe, it's like the people who say we're all going to drown with sea level rise and then buy these expensive coastal homes.
Michelle and Barack.
Al Gore.
You know.
And it's like, well,
you obviously don't believe it. You wouldn't have spent all your money, your family's fortune, and put it into this building that's right on the coast. Anyway, in our next story, which is very brief, it's interesting. So a panel of experts at the CDC have had a vote. I love that.
Yeah.
They voted on who would get the vaccine first. And, you know, will you be getting it first? Well, here's what they decided. That they decided that healthcare workers and residents of long-term care facilities will be the first to receive the long-awaited coronavirus vaccine. And the recommendations now must be approved by the CDC and all of that. But that's basically the plan right now, is that those are the first people who are going to get it. And of course, the question is, are those people going to want it? And it's interesting, I actually didn't have it here, Phelan, but it was interesting. I just saw a story today, a headline, that of healthcare workers who are the first in line to get it, 40% of them, 40%, who are polled, said they'd like to wait. They don't want to be the first to get it. They'd like to wait, and that's healthcare professionals. So if you're sitting at home thinking, you know what, I really don't want to get this vaccine right at the beginning. I'd like to wait a couple of years. I'm with you, by the way, on that. But the problem is, and it's becoming increasingly obvious, the problem is that you will, if you do not take the vaccine, you will not get to travel. You will not go to the cinema. You will not go to a restaurant, etc., etc., etc.
No, you won't go. You won't be allowed.
You won't be allowed in.
You won't be allowed in. You won't be allowed to a restaurant. You'll be allowed to a gig.
You'll be basically traveling around with a passport, a vaccine passport, saying,
"Oh yeah, there was someone on Twitter.
I'm clean.
There was someone on Twitter the other day saying, "Oh, you know, I think yes, someone misrepresented what someone said and tweeted out. Oh, there's going to be healthcare, you know, passbooks where you're not allowed to do things." And the person goes, "This is not what this article says, you know." Stop misrepresenting. I wrote in on Twitter, and you can see it at Phelan McAleer. You know, I wrote, look, yeah, maybe this person didn't represent the article properly with the headline. And
yes.
All, but this is, Qantas have said you're not going to be able to fly.
Yeah. Apparently Ryanair.
Lots of airlines are going to say you're not going to be able to fly if you don't have a vaccine. People, publicans and concert owners in the UK have said you're not going to be able to attend our events unless you can prove you've had the vaccine. So that person may have misrepresented that article with a off kilter headline, but that's the reality.
Yeah,
you know. So tell us about the super spreader.
Oh God,
the super spreader event. Boom boom.
Sort of orated this, but I have to say every kind of pun available lends itself to this story. So yes, there was a super spreader event in New Orleans. New Orleans Swingers Convention led to 41 COVID-19 infections, event organizers say. The owner of Naughty Events, yeah, like we needed to know that, which hosted the convention, by the way, I love the phrase convention, like it's, you know, something about how to cure cancer, said the company has reached out to attendees and conducted very aggressive contact tracing. The owner of an events company says his four-day swingers convention in New Orleans held last month has been tied to 41 new coronavirus infections. The case count from the Naughty Nolins convention, which began on November 11th, jumped from 5 positive tests to 41 in a matter of days. Naughty Events owner Bob Hannaford wrote in a blog post Friday. Hannaford wrote that the company had reached out to attendees to tell them to get tested. Anyway, you know, I just felt like I had to bring your attention to that particular spreader
event.
It's
another reason why I
don't
like New Orleans, or New Orleans as they
Phelan
call it.
Has never been to New Orleans, but he doesn't like it from what he's read.
It's just, well, no, from what I've seen, it's that whole Hurricane Katrina victimhood. It's the weather doesn't seem great.
That's a cat.
That's two cats. There's a high crime rate, and it's just nothing about it ever really invites me to go there. So
there you go.
Yeah.
So
I don't even like that kind of music either.
I love this, by the way. I just love this next story. It's unbelievable. You know, you don't say. And this is a great story, by the way, from MRC, Media Research Council, Media Research Centre, who put this together. And it's just fabulous. And their headline is, you don't say. 4 weeks post-election, CNN now claims China hid COVID data from the world. What? Like, basically, breaking news. So I'm going to read the way the Media Research Center wrote this because it's very funny. Several weeks after the national election that appears to have ended with Joe Biden as the president of the United States, president-elect of the United States, CNN and Jake Tapper have managed to miraculously grow the spine and brain they've been missing for 4 years Donald Trump sat in the Oval Office. On Monday night, the news network declared in an exclusive bombshell that should shock absolutely no one who hasn't been in a coma for the past 9 months that China had, hold on to your hats, here, hidden their true COVID case numbers from the world and had dropped the ball in diagnosing new cases as the virus began spreading across the nation and the globe. Salem, have we been talking about this forever?
And they've been talking about Trump. As MRC says, Trump caused COVID, and Trump was responsible for the virus spreading. And then, you know, the 7-minute report, Jake Tapper detailed a trove of leaked documents handed over to CNN by a Chinese government whistleblower. You know, and that how they had misleading public data in the early days of the pandemic. All things that Trump said from the very beginning, but of course that were denounced as xenophobia and racism. Remember, it was called the Wu flu and the Wuhan virus.
You know? Yeah.
So these are bad people. These are not good journalists.
These are terrible.
So quarantining, Anne.
Oh yeah, so quarantining. So originally, by the way, and it's interesting to know this, Phelan, people, you're very smart, so you probably knew this. So the original word quarantine meant how many days?
14.
No. The original word quarantine meant
40. Oh.
So originally 40 days, that's back in the day. That's back in the good old days.
Italy.
Back in the good old days when one out of two people died in the plague.
Yes.
Now, obviously, we're in better times. But however, so the more recent version of what a quarantine means is 14 days. Well, the CDC are about to redefine that. And they're going to reduce it from 14 days to 7 days. For those people who've received a negative test, and for 10 days for those who've not been tested. Mm-hmm. I just thought I'd bring that to your attention because I think it's going to be good news for people.
But it's also madness. Like, so the science isn't worth a tuppence halfpenny. So anyway, NPR, I mean, I don't think we should spend that much time on this story
because it's
a badly written NPR story basically saying, actually, government online learning is bad. Private charter school learning is good.
Online.
Is better.
It's better.
But there's been a long history of charter online schools being bad, which we're going to remind you about, even though they're actually better now. And we're going to try and remind you of all the times we said they were bad in the past in the hope that you won't notice they're good now.
Can I just, and it's Phelan's right, but it's very interesting, this story, because it's NPR trying to rubbish charter schools but kind of being unable to, because the lead of the story is what the lead of the story is, even though they spend the rest of the time doing something else. So here's the lead. Here's how the story opens. And it's great, by the way. Parent Mandy Brower vividly remembers what it was like when her kids' school in Yokan, Oklahoma, switched to distance learning in the spring. It was just like we never learned with our teachers again. They never checked on things again. Like, this is what the kids and the family said, right? She says school consisted of just a few short daily assignments. And I couldn't, and the mother says, Mandy, I couldn't see my kids' education going that way. So this fall, Brower enrolled her two daughters in Epic Charter Schools, a virtual program that allows students to study online at their own pace, with pre-recorded lessons and one-on-one teacher support. For Brower, the difference has been night and day. She says Epic has it down pat and they know how to help families. So this is a charter school. This is a privately run version of the virtual schooling, right? Brower wasn't the only person to give the Oklahoma-based virtual school a try this year. Since last spring, Epic enrollment has grown to be double the size of the state's largest public school district. And then it goes on, right? So that's the story, which, by the way, that is a story, and that's interesting.
And then they go through this whole history where they allege that these virtual charter schools are basically rip-offs and frauds, despite the evidence they have at the beginning of the story that it's the best thing to happen to children in this year. So
By the way, it's amazing, an amazing story. And I'm really glad, by the way, that people in Oklahoma have access to a charter school that does give them this remote learning.
This is so important,
though. It's so important, and it's incredible.
And it's bad that NPR journalism.
Oh, yeah, they can't. NPR just can't help themselves. So instead of telling the story straight, the way it was reported, by the way, by the parents, they go through and bring up every trope they've ever had, anti-charter school trope,
yeah,
to try and discredit the story that they're actually reporting.
That's journalism for you.
What's your next story there, Philip?
Well, this is about...
Oh, yeah. This is a very interesting story. Hospitals. Oh, God. I love this story. So this is a story that I sort of teased you at the beginning with.
Yeah.
You won't believe this. And by the way, this is really interesting. And I've heard something similar from other places. So, for example, in Ireland, by the way, it's interesting. At the beginning of the pandemic, the big problem in Ireland, they said, was that there weren't enough ICU beds. And I spoke to intensive care unit beds. And I spoke to a medical professional we know in Ireland about this issue, who reported to me that in the 9 months since they realized that, they have increased the ICU beds, the intensive care beds in Ireland by zero. And here's a similar situation. So, you know, as you remember, and we obviously make fun of all the time about the fact about, you know, we make the fun all the time about the beds and about hospital capacity and all that, because that's the reason for flattening the curve. So here's an interesting factoid. California, one of the richest places on the planet Earth, has one third the number of beds, of hospital beds, per capita of Poland. And only two states have fewer beds for residents, Washington and Oregon. So, you know, and by the way, that is, I mean, I just, so do you get that? Does everyone get that? What really matters is obviously per capita, numbers per capita. We're always talking about per capita. So basically, California has
one third
of the per capita beds that Poland has. And Poland, by the way, God bless them. And we obviously have Magda, and we love Magda, and Magda's Polish. And Poland's a great country. Poland's a great country, but a poorer country. But Poland have better organized themselves to deal with a pandemic, to deal with health emergencies, than California, where you would imagine, you know, there's nothing that they care about more.
Yeah, and they've had 9 months, and they've lots of money, and they're closing restaurants, and they're closing schools, and they're having these lockdowns to stop the system being overwhelmed, and they could actually future-proof the system and the healthcare system. So you don't need the lockdowns.
And you know, here's a question, and I'm sure you know the answer to it, lots of you out there. Obviously, there's a reason why California hasn't got the hospital bed capacity that Poland has, because California is spending its money on other things. And I think we know the kind of other things that they're spending their money on and devoting their money to, when they should be doing things like that really matter, like having hospital capacity.
But
they're spending money on gender studies and on ethnic whatever dance routines or whatever. But anything other than what matters.
And Ellen Page is now Elliot Page.
Indeed.
In fact, I am now, I should be cancelled for saying that, because I have dead named her. Do you know that?
Oh, you've dead named her.
You're not supposed to acknowledge that Ellen Page ever existed now.
Okay. So, but Elliot Page, by the way, is just a cisgender person, Phelan. I don't know why you're making a big deal of it.
True.
That's all that
not
we need to know now.
All.
Not courageous at all. We've come to the end. Again, thank you to everyone who contributed for Giving Tuesday. We are so lucky to have you guys and to know you guys and to be supported by you guys who believe in what we're doing. And please continue to do that. We're at unreportedstorysociety.com. Unreportedstorysociety.com. Love ya.
Thank you.
And see you on... We won't be back till Monday. We'll see you on Monday.
Yeah, bye.